We hear so much about the need to curb climate change these days that many people assume it's just quote-unquote settled science. That, and by the way, settled science is an oxymoron because if it's science, it's not really settled. But anyway, we're going to talk about this right now with Dr. Cal Beissner, who is the head of Cornwall Alliance. And basically the question is much of the Western world, including our current president, in pursuit of a worthless goal, and that is to curtail supposed catastrophic, and that's the key word, man-made, that's the second key phrase, global warming or climate change. Cal, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jerry. Glad to be with you. And the short answer to that question is it's not worthwhile at all. It's just really, truly madness. It's madness scientifically. It's madness economically. It's madness ethically.
All right. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Cal, before we get into the meat of the subject, can you tell us what the Cornwall Alliance is?
Sure. We're a network of just under 70 Christian scholars. About a third are natural scientists, including, by the way, some of the world's top climate scientists. About a third are economists, specializing most of them in either environmental or developmental economics. And about a third are theologians, philosophers, ethicists. And we seek to educate the public and policymakers on biblical earth stewardship, economic development for the very poor around the world, and the gospel of Jesus Christ, together with the biblical worldview, theology, and ethics that come along with that. And we focus on teaching what it means for Christians to fulfill the dominion mandate that God gave to mankind in Genesis 1:28. Having created Adam and Eve, male and female, after his own image, God blessed them and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and everything that moves on the face of the earth. And this dominion should be a godly dominion, not abusive, not exploitative, but something that reflects God's own activity, which we see earlier in Genesis chapter 1. God made everything out of nothing. He made light out of non-life, non-light. He brought order out of darkness, order out of chaos, and life out of non-life and great abundance of life. And he instructed each kind of life to multiply and fill its niche in the world. This is the kind of thing that we ought to be doing. So our task, as human beings made in God's image, is to enhance the fruitfulness and the safety and the beauty of the earth to the glory of God and the benefit of our neighbors.
And the website at Cornwall Alliance is?
CornwallAlliance.org. That's CornwallAlliance.org. We also have a YouTube channel, Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, and a Facebook page.
Okay, now you and I have had previous discussions on this, and it's my understanding that even if the Western world pulled out all the stops, and those stops are huge. I mean, these steps would be so draconian to our economy and would cause a lot of problems. But anyway, even if we did all those things in such things as discovered or discussed in the Paris Accords and or the Kyoto Agreement, you know, a few years before, what would it actually accomplish if they did all these things to fight supposedly man-made catastrophic global warming?
Well, it wouldn't accomplish much at all. Now, I want to make sure that it's clear first that we don't question that human activity almost certainly contributes to the global warming that we have seen over the last, the last roughly 60 years or so. Over the last 150 years or so, global average temperature has risen by about a degree Celsius, about 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit. And some of that happened early on, and then we had some cooling, and then we've had some warming. And that warming, human activity, largely burning fossil fuels, but also making concrete and raising livestock, things like that, have probably contributed significantly to that, possibly even more than half of that. But it's more than half of a tiny, tiny amount. I mean, keep in mind, ordinarily the nighttime low to daytime high temperature difference in most locations can run anywhere from 20 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit. The winter low to summer high in most places can run anywhere from 50 to 100 degrees difference. And so a difference of a degree or two average global temperature is simply insignificant as far as any ecosystem or human well-being is concerned. But if we were in the West to completely eliminate our addition to the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, that is, if we were to reach net zero, which is the popular phrase nowadays, we would make no significant difference in global average temperature, certainly not anything that would have any impact on ecosystems or on human well-being. But in order to do that, we would have to abandon the most abundant, affordable, reliable, instant on demand, scalable. That means you can get enough of it to meet all the needs of billions of people. Energy sources in the world, fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. And we'd have to replace them with diffuse, very expensive, very unreliable wind, solar, and other so-called renewable energy sources. The result would be to push up the prices of energy all over the world, which we've already seen happening, and that would harm everybody but the poor most, because we need energy for everything we do, producing food, clothing, shelter, transportation, communication, medical care. Everything requires energy. And when you make energy more expensive, you make everything else more expensive, and the poor suffer the most, far more than they would suffer from any kind of climate change, because frankly, poor people can live in any climate from the Arctic Circle to the Sahara Desert or the Brazilian rainforest. What they can't do is to survive well without adequate energy.
By the way, before we explore more why are fossil fuels viewed as so bad, etc., what do China and India contribute to the whole issue of CO2 emissions and so forth? Because I know it's much bigger than the Western world.
China is the world's biggest emitter of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. The United States is number two. India is number three. China and India are increasing their CO2 emissions very rapidly. We could completely eliminate all CO2 emissions from the United States, and within just a few years, just the increase from China would replace everything that we do. Similarly, just the increase from India would eliminate everything that we do. We really can't have much of an impact on global average temperature from the United States alone, or for that matter, from the whole Western world, all of the developed nations. The developing nations are properly, rightly, righteously increasing their use of fossil fuels to lift their people out of poverty, because poverty is a greater risk to human life and well-being than anything related to climate.
But are CO2 emissions even a problem? I mean, I think, is that even, a debatable point?
Well, it's a debatable point for sure. I think the best evidence is that they do not contribute significantly, let me rephrase that. They do not contribute dangerously to global warming, but they do contribute magnificently to all of life on Earth. Carbon dioxide is absolutely essential to photosynthesis. Plants must have it to survive. And the more they have, the better they grow. What this means is that as carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere increases, we get more plant growth. That means more food for everything that eats plants and everything that eats things that do eat plants. And again, the poor benefit from this more than anybody else, because they're the ones who can least afford adequate food. So as food prices go down because food production is going up, the poor benefit.
But the poor are not benefiting right now under Joe Biden's implementation of trying to curtail CO2 emissions in America. He, of course, canceled the pipelines. We go to the gas pump now when we have to spend a lot more money. Energy independence has gone the way of the dinosaur for now,
Yes.
Fossil fuels are viewed as this, you know, terrible ogre or bad phenomenon in the land. So comment on this. The main point is this is all in pursuit of a worthless goal, as I see it, you know, trying to understand what you're saying.
Yes, it certainly is in pursuit of a worthless goal. And it is truly harmful to every American citizen, but especially those on low or limited fixed incomes. I mean, just what has happened to the price of gasoline over the last year? It's risen by more than a dollar per gallon. What that means is that, you know, every time you go fill up your gas tank, you're spending an extra 15 to 20 bucks. That's not easy for people who have very low incomes. Propane prices, natural gas prices have shot up, natural gas by over 50%, since a year ago. People who heat their homes with natural gas or with propane are hurt by that. And electricity prices are going up because, natural gas or even coal used to generate electricity, it's getting more expensive because of the Biden policies. And then besides that, we're seeing various states increasing their dependence on wind and solar, which also cause electricity prices to rise, although some of that rise in price is masked. It's hidden by the fact that massive, massive tax subsidies, either by tax breaks or by actual direct money money subsidies to the wind and solar businesses, mm-hmm. Or a number of other processes result in wind and solar receiving hundreds of times per much in subsidy per unit of energy generated more than natural gas or coal or oil. People gripe all the time about subsidies going to coal, oil, and natural gas. Well, yes, a very tiny amount per unit of energy produced does, but it's hundreds of times more per unit of energy produced that go to wind and solar.
Hmm. So what do you think is the solution to this? And by the way, in effect, by canceling the pipelines and so forth, that does make us dependent on these other nations.
Yes, it does. And that dependence is not only on other nations for oil or other, you know, or fossil fuels. It's also a dependence on them for other minerals. This is very important, Jerry. There are, I believe it's 18 strategic minerals that the U.S. government has identified as absolutely essential to national security, mm-hmm. because they're used either for energy or for the various components of our military equipment, fighters, ships, submarines, and so on. Of those minerals, we are dependent on the People's Republic of China. That's, you know, the country governed by the Communist Party of China. We are dependent on them for over 80%, and in some cases over 90% of every one of those strategic minerals. And China, meanwhile, is using the West's fears of dangerous man-made global warming as a weapon to weaken the West's economies and therefore to weaken the West's military as China pursues its goal, expressed in what it calls the 100-year marathon, to become the world's top superpower by the year 2049, 100 years after the Communist Revolution there.
Okay, we need to wrap up.
To dominate the world.
Wow. Cal Bisoner, more information at cornwallalliance.org. Thanks so much for being with us, Cal. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry. God
Great.
Bless.
You too. Bye-bye.